patients feel that they're more than just their deficits, right? Everybody's more than just their deficits. And when they come to us, we know that they have medical challenges. But I think we have an opportunity to really look at people's strengths, because in the context of trauma and violence and abuse, we see enormous resiliency and strengths.
Hello, everyone. I am Isis Garcia Rodriguez, and this is TikTok. Trauma-informed care creates a roadmap to resilience by moving away from a deficit model in which we ask you what's wrong with you to a strengths-based perspective where we ask what happened to you. In an attempt to reach all audiences, the Brigham and Women's Partners Trauma-Informed Care Initiative is using the TikTok podcast platform to continue education and disseminate information on trauma-informed care for healthcare providers, patients, educators, and community members. Trauma-informed care is based off of 6 guiding principles, and for a comprehensive list of those guiding principles and 3 implementation domains according to SAMHSA, please see the 2 graphics that can be found on Twitter, or you can listen to episode 1 of this podcast. During this episode, we would like to take the time to explain what trauma-informed care is, what it means, and the advantages of using a TIC lens. And with me today, I have Annie Lewis O'Connor. She's the founder and director of the Care Clinic and co-chair of the Partners TIC Initiative. She works at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts, and she is an expert in the care of patients impacted by trauma, violence, and abuse. So Annie, thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. So while you run the Care Clinic, and I know you also work in the emergency department, so can you tell me a little bit about what that's like for you in regard to the type of trauma that you see, and maybe talk a little bit about the prevalence of trauma and where that plays for a lot of people?
Yeah, it's a great question. First of all, I think that we, in the work that we're doing here at Brigham and Women's, define trauma very broadly. So we look at individual trauma, and those could be events that have occurred in a person's life that might be impacting their well-being. And, for example, that could be a car accident, or they were witness to some sort of horrific event. You know, they lost a parent maybe at a young age, so we see that as individual trauma. Then there's interpersonal trauma, and interpersonal trauma is really that happens in the context of a relationship, and that could be something like domestic violence, sexual violence, human trafficking, gang violence, violence that occurs within the home. Once again, in the context of a relationship. And then the one trauma that we often don't think about, but we are starting to think and talk about in healthcare, is collective trauma. And by collective trauma, we're speaking about historical and structural oppressions that have occurred in people's lives. We think about racism. We think about immigration policies as another good example of collective trauma. And really thinking about how all those things impact an individual's well-being. And so we define it very, very broadly and in the context of those 3 domains, if you will.
Okay, awesome. So thinking about trauma generally and clearly seeing that there's multiple levels into how it can impact people, what is the general impact, or where are some areas of someone's life where trauma will definitely impact?
Yeah, well, we have really good data now, and the literature really is saturated with lots of information on and lots of research on the impact of trauma on people's biopsychosocial well-being. For example, there was the ACE study that came out in 1998. It is adverse child exposures or experiences in childhood and how that then impacts one's health and well-being as they grow into adulthood. That study really had some profound effects in thinking about healthcare delivery. In pediatric practices, we are looking at ACE scores. There are 10 ACEs, adverse experiences, that fall in the category of physical neglect and sort of home dysfunction. And when you add them all up, there are 10 of them. And what they found in the study, and this was a pretty homogeneous study of about 17,000 white, educated, employed individuals. When they looked at that population, they found that 64% of them at least had one ACE. And then 38% or more had four ACEs. And those experiences, we now know, do have an impact on people's health and well-being. Also know that really important when we think about trauma exposures, the impact that that has on interpersonal relationships, trust, sort of fear of systems. So those are things that we can address through trauma-informed care approaches.
So when we talk about trauma-informed care approaches, I know that some people might not know what that means or what that really entails. And so according to SAMHSA, we have about 6 principles that guide trauma-informed care. So can you talk a little bit about what those are and how we can use those in a trauma-informed care approach?
Yeah, it's great there. We really think about the 6 principles of SAMHSA, and I'll address them in a minute. But when we think about them, we want to think about them with the triple aim. And what I mean by the triple aim is that we embrace the tenets of trauma-informed care into the organization. So top-down, bottom-up, across. We think about also patient relationships with their providers, and members of the healthcare team. And we also think about how colleagues engage with each other. And we use those 6 principles to think about those different types of relationships. There are 6 principles. I'll name them briefly: safety, trustworthiness and transparency, peer support, collaboration and mutuality, empowerment, voice and choice, and cultural, historical, and gender acknowledgement. And what we're finding is that as we think about our cases and either consult on a case or actually caring for a patient that is impacted by trauma and violence and abuse, if we use these 6 principles to guide our care and treatment, we really feel that it is a much more comprehensive way of really being explicit and assuring that each one of those principles are addressed.
So I also know that something that we talk about in trauma-informed care is moving away from a deficit model, asking what's wrong with you, and more of a strengths-based perspective, asking what happened to you. So can you talk about maybe why that's important and why we need to be making this transition?
Yeah, it's great because, patients have told us, and actually when SAMHSA did the original work around the 6 principles, is that patients feel that they're more than just their deficits, right? Everybody's more than just their deficits. And when they come to us, we know that they have medical challenges. But I think we have an opportunity to really look at people's strengths, because in the context of trauma and violence and abuse, we see enormous resiliency and strengths. And so to really balance that in our care and treatment plans with patients is really important. And we have found in the care clinic that that gives us a lot of traction with patients to really call out their strengths and the things they're proud of and love, because they are. And taking those strengths and the factors of their resilience and building that right into their treatment plan has been, we feel, has really informed the treatment plan better, and we are seeing better results.
So there are definitely clear benefits for patients. Are there any benefits for maybe providers who are, working with a TIC lens, or even like hospitals?
Absolutely. So earlier when I said we've got this triple aim, right, of the organization, our relationship with our patients, and the third one, our colleagues, right, so how we treat each other. I have found, and I think colleagues on my team have found, that when we use a trauma-informed care approach, that we ourselves are not carrying incredible burden, because we're also now not just looking at deficits, we're looking at their resilience. And so we have a lot of celebrations in that regard. I also think that for us to think about trauma-informed care, you had brought up, so what's wrong with you, and the switch in the paradigm, we see it as what's happened to you, or has something happened in your life that's impacted your health and well-being. And instead of getting into the details of that event, we move more towards how has that event impacted you. And so really looking at the symptoms and helping them to see the strengths and where they are and how they even made it to this appointment. So really, instead of what's wrong with you or why are you here or what's bothering you, we do ask what has happened and how has it impacted you and what effects has it had on you. And we just find that that is much more helpful. I'll give an example. A patient told me that she was in a plane crash. And while I might have been interested in knowing more details about the plane crash, it really wasn't. That was more my curiosity. It wasn't going to be anything that was going to change. But when I asked her, how did the plane crash impact your health and your well-being, she went on to say that she can't get in an elevator, she can't go up an escalator, she has a lot of anxiety. Every time she hears a plane go overhead, she gets triggered. So we worked with the symptoms around her anxiety. And the details of what happened in the plane crash really weren't that important.
Mm. Okay. So now that you start speaking about, maybe a patient that you had, what does TIC look like in practice for you, working every day with patients, working with individuals who have trauma? Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like for you?
Thank you for asking the question, because I think what helps us when we think about TIC is to think about the lived experience of some of our patients. So what immediately comes to mind is a 24-year-old woman that came to our emergency room with substance use disorder, suicidal ideation, actually a suicide attempt, and a long history in the life of trafficking. So she had multiple medical and behavioral health issues going on. And sometimes as healthcare providers, we feel overwhelmed with cases like this with so much complexity. But what we started with her is in a conversation of, what are the most important things that you would like to work on right now? We also discovered during this visit to the emergency room that she was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And she was about 3 or 4 months along. And so she had three things. She wanted to have a healthy baby. She wanted to address her substance use disorder. And she was homeless. She was hoping that she could just get some stable housing. And in the first 2 weeks with her, that's all we did was work on those three things with her. We got her housing. We started her detox off of methadone onto Suboxone. And we got her hooked into prenatal care. And if we fast forward 1 year, she's given birth to a healthy baby. She is still addressing her issues around substance use, but is very successful and is looking for transitional living with her baby.
Yeah, that's so amazing. And I know that sometimes people will say, that's great, but, I'm already giving good care. This care is really good for me and my patients seem okay. They're happy. So, how can we not settle for good care and really make sure that we are applying trauma-informed care?
Yeah, that's such a good question, because as we think about it, we always ask ourselves, is that just good care or is that trauma-informed care? And trauma-informed care is really grounded in those six principles. And sometimes, I think about empowerment, voice, and choice. And sometimes in healthcare, we're very prescriptive. We tell the patients what we think is best for them. And in a TIC, and that's good care because we do have some expertise, but in trauma-informed care, we would include with the patient their ability to make choices, their ability to maybe make a choice that we don't agree with, but still stay in that relationship with them and allow them to make those and have autonomy and their right to self-determination. So in summary, when we think about trauma-informed care, there's these four R's, these four assumptions we want to make. One is that we realize and recognize the widespread incidence and prevalence of traumatic events in people's lives. So that means our patients, but that also means our staff. So we have to be cognizant of the fact that many that we work with and that are working in healthcare have had their own experiences. The other R, recognition, is really that we can recognize the signs and symptoms, and that even without a disclosure, we can still treat that patient. So I sometimes will hear from people that, I know this patient is being abused, but they won't tell me. And I say, that's okay. They don't have to tell you. That's their right. So use universal awareness and treat them as if they were. So recognize the signs and symptoms and just work off that without a disclosure. And then the response is responding in ways that are a trauma-informed care, asking people, is it okay if I do this? What would you like to see happen? Can you tell me if you have any cultural practices that I should maybe know about as we provide care to you? So really responding using those six principles. And then the ultimate assumption with trauma-informed care is that we resist re-traumatization. And we really think that about the medical procedures we're doing, and while they're normal procedures to us in many ways, for our patients, they may not be. And so we want to be aware of that, maybe move slower, maybe talk slower, maybe use teach-back methods where we can ask patients, do you want me to stop there? Let me see if you have any questions. And so if we stick to those four, recognize those four R's, and integrate that into the six guiding principles, I think that we will move from good care to trauma-informed care.
That's great. So basically from this conversation that we've just had, something that I'm taking away is that we just need to understand that trauma comes in many different forms, and it's a very complex topic to talk about. So when we think about trauma-informed care, it's not just changing the way you work, but it's about, you know, being open-minded and being compassionate with patients, with the people you interact with, and your colleagues. So do you have any closing remarks or anything that you would like to emphasize about trauma-informed care that maybe has changed your perspective in the way that you interact with everyone every day?
That's so good. I think there's a few things to point out. One is language that we use. You know, we can be very descriptive using adjectives that now that we have a patient portal that's open and patients can see what you write about them, we need to think about that. I think we're in a very fast-paced environment, and we're moving fast because we're trying to keep up. And when we do that, for patients that need a little more time, we do a disservice there, and we probably don't get our treatment plans quite right. So I think that just slowing ourselves down, thinking about these principles, and just practicing it one patient at a time to see how it feels, you know, practicing using the broader questions, practicing having a conversation with your patient where we're going to push the computer out of the way and tell me a little bit more about how you feel that's impacted you. And instead of moving, you know, to detailed histories, really just trying to understand the impact it's had on people has made a huge difference.
So thank you so much for joining me and having this conversation with me today, Annie. For any updates throughout the week, or if anyone wants to ask you a question or follow you, you do have a Twitter, and you can find Annie at ALO Boston. And so if you have any questions, you're welcome to reach out to Annie on Twitter. And we'd appreciate if you could leave any comments or rate us about things that you would like to see or things that you really enjoyed. So don't forget to tune in next week, and we will be reviewing a case for the first time on the TikTok podcast. But until then, we'll be counting down the minutes on TikTok. Bye.
Thank you.